Corporation and also the Sea Alaska Corporation. I believe that last night I was talking about 1991 and the takeover by the IRA. During this time, I've been thinking that all our Aboriginal rights have been violated by the federal government and the state of Alaska. I believe the only way to resolve this is go back to Congress and have them amend some of their regulations that they put on the land that they gave back to the Aboriginal owners, who are the Alaskan Native. I was born and raised here in Klawak. My real name is Roy Earl Dick, born of Mary Dick and Peter Dick. My mother never went to school, but spoke broken English. My dad went to the third grade. I've seen these two people talk of the land at supper table and say pretty soon this land will be ours again. Now that it is ours, it isn't really ours. Like I said last night, the A&B and the A&S fought for this land. They won through the court, through the tool of the white men. They got the title to this land. Now it seems that Congress said, well, it's yours for 20 years. After that, it could be bought back by other people that had the money. They gave us over just about $1 billion, and that's all gone. The original corporation is supposed to be protecting the rest of the villages, helping them. They have never done this. And all I've seen in this village corporation is jealousy. Nobody wants to get ahead. Everybody's fighting one among one another. This is what the land claims has done to the native population of Southeast Alaska. What we used to know as unity isn't unity anymore. I believe that they brought these corporations in here to divide and conquer, like they've always done. I hope in your report that somewhere along the way they will find a solution so that the natives could get their land and keep it. Our sovereignty isn't our sovereignty anymore. We don't have anything to say about the regulations that they put on us. The hunting, the fishing, and the gathering of food. Everything you'd have to get permits for. I remember when I was a kid, I never used to have to get a permit to go out and gather fish eggs or go out here in a bay and catch salmon so that we could have something to eat on the table. That was our way of life, our lifestyle of gathering food. Now that's all gone. Everything is permits. I don't know why they've seemed to have targeted in on the native Alaskans. Maybe it's because we fought for what we thought was ours and what we known was ours. Seems like they just want to say, hey, we'll let you keep it a while and we'll take it again. I believe that this land should stay in the native village, which we call our land. We never have the boundaries between Craig and Klawak or Heidelberg and Klawak. All natives knew where their land was. They said this from this island to there belongs to us. And the other natives respected that. And we sold land to one another. We traded We didn't say, here, sign this piece of paper, it's a deed for that land. Your word was your bond. I've seen it happen when I was a little kid, that land across the bay. I've seen my dad give a man money. He didn't give my dad a piece of paper and say, hey, they just stood there and shook hands. That was their bond. Nowadays, that everything that you buy and sell, you have to have a piece of paper saying that you own it or you sold it. And, you know, the Indian word isn't taken anymore. When an Indian says something, they say, well, he must be lying or he doesn't know what he's talking about. And yet, a long time ago, our forefathers had very good foresight. They said, you have to get an education. And that's what the education has brought us, grief and sorrow. Because that we were trying to learn the white man's way. And in the 100 years or 150 years that they've been here, all it has is brought us grief and sorrow. I'd like to say that I think the only solution to the land is by separating the corporations from the land. Let the corporations have the money and all that's coming from the state and the federal. But give the land to the IRA so that the native people could say, this is our land. This is what we own. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Martinez. Thank you very much. Well, does anybody else wish to say anything this afternoon? Well, I think so. I want to thank all of those who attended the meetings and who spoke, and to invite those present to let others know that the Commission has found this a very useful time in Kluwak, and that we have learned a great deal here, and we're glad that we enjoyed the hospitality of the people here, and I want to say for the record that we will remember this visit, and it'll be one of those memories that we'll carry with us throughout our work in Alaska. So the meetings here in Kluwak stand adjourned, and once again, my thanks.
Well, perhaps we could begin. I think we've all met. My name is Tom Berger, and I'm conducting the Alaska Native Review Commission. I've been asked to do this by the Inuit Circumpolar Conference and the World Council of Indigenous People, and the purpose is to enable Alaska Natives everywhere in the state to discuss the land claims settlement, the corporations, 1991, sale of shares, taxation of land, sovereignty, self-government, and all the questions that I'm sure you're familiar with and that we've heard about everywhere we've been in the state. We are holding this meeting, and we thank you for inviting us here to do so in the Elders Center in Heidelberg, and in the presence of Haida Elders here. I should begin by thanking you for inviting us to join you for supper. We enjoyed it. My wife, Beverly, is traveling with us, And Jeff Berliner is the sound man, and everything that is said is taken down and forms part of the permanent record of the proceedings. And Mary Kentswick is working with us too. And we heard from some of the people from Heidelberg at the meetings we had at Klawock yesterday and today, but we're pleased you invited us here to see the Haida country and to visit Heidelberg and to obtain your views this evening. So nobody has to move. You can just say your piece from where you're seated and it'll be picked up on the microphone. And if we could proceed informally, and if you wish, feel like saying something, just go ahead, and perhaps you would just state your name right at the beginning when you decide to speak. So if that's all right, we can begin with... Ma'am, what about you? You wanted us to get started, so maybe you should go first.
But I'd like to hear Mrs. Anderson's views first.
All right. Mrs. Anderson?
Right. This is
Mrs. Anderson, sorry.
My name is Helen Sanderson. When the land claims were still pending, that's Tinkenheide, in which I was involved quite a lot. And before it even went through, they formed committees from each communities to plan on how to spend the money before we even knew just how much we were going to get. I opposed, but still, I went along because being picked out as a committee woman, I went along. And when we were in Juneau at one of the meetings, the area director, Mr. Bennett, was part Oneida Indian from the state, and he was illustrating on the blackboard how he was using cattle as illustration. He said the same could be applied to fish. He was new to Alaska, and it was kind of amusing because there's so much difference between cattle and fish, because he didn't have any knowledge of how a fish was used for home and then also for commercial. And sure enough, when the land claims did go through, it was entirely different from what most of us had expected. Now, there's been advantages, and one of my disappointments is that there's no provision made for the older people. A lot of them that started this land claims act are long gone. And then I'm afraid that in the 1891, a lot of them will be selling, regardless of what people say, because that's the only thing they'll ever realize from it. I can't see how they're going to be prevented. And now we can look back and see that we did give up our land. Land that really belonged to us. Now others have to say over it. And I'd like to hear what was said at the talk.
Well, thank you very much, Mrs. Sanderson. Mr. Paul Tain spoke at Klawock. Woodrow Morrison Jr. spoke at Klawock. Tom Abel and Adrian Paterno, they came up from Heidelberg to speak. A lot of the Klawock people spoke, and the feeling was very much by the Klawock people. Their feeling was that they felt that they wanted to make sure they held on to their land. Two of them said they would be happy to sell their shares, and if that meant losing their land, that was all right with them. But they seemed to be a minority, and the others who spoke argued against that. They said, no, we have to hold on to our land. We have to hold on to what we've got. Jim Martinez was the last to speak today from Pawtucket, and he said we've got to hold on to the land, and he said the best way to do that is to separate the land from the corporations, turn the land in trust over to the IRAs, and then let the corporations carry on with the money that they've still got left, and we'll still have the land. That's a view we've heard many places in the state. Mr. Haltane gave us a lot of the history when he came up to Kloak to speak.
You're talking about Victor?
Yes.
Haldane.
Oh, forgive me, Mr. Haldane.
I was wondering who.
He gave us some of the history of land claims in Alaska and related it to international law. And Mr. Woodrow Morrison Jr. Discussed some of the claims of the Haida people, and Adrian Letourneau and Tom Abel talked about some of the complications of working with so many institutions, the city, corporation, IRA, coastal management, Clinton and Haida, ANB, ANS, Sea Alaska, all the corporations, state, federal. I can't remember them all, so they explained it all, and they said it's hard for people in a small village to keep track of all those things and stay well informed and keep up to date and so on. So, but look, I'm doing more talking than anybody else, and is there anything you'd like to add now to what you said, Mrs. Sanderson?
To be well informed in all the activities in the village, you have to take part.
Mm-hmm.
And mostly it's the seniors that are still keeping things going. I mean, it's different, like the A&B and the A&S church work. I'd like to see the younger ones get more involved in that.
Well, any other ladies wish to speak?
I'm Esther Nix, and I don't know. We were better off, seemed like, before this land claim came through. We were able to claim the places where we dried, our forefathers and us dried fish and halibut and different burial villages that where we lived before to get out and lived during the halibut drying season out Muson, different places where we dug our gardens. But seem like since this land claim has come through, we've gone back further than we ever were. We got laws to go by, and we can't get out, and well, I guess it isn't on account of this land claims, but we're allowed 10 or 20 fish to carry us through the winter, where before we put up 300-400 fish to hide us while we were going to grade school is what we used to put up when my brother and all of us were going to school. But now there isn't any place we can call our own. Like even this little island over here where they used to dig, where they're logging, where Natron's had gardens, different places where we dried fish out of the Yuzon. Seemed like, and we lived in Long Island for many years, and here the people from up north is logging there, and here we're sitting with hardly anything. No money coming in. We are worse off than we were 30 years ago. We're not making any money on this logging, and and our cooperation, it seems to be dirt poor. We don't realize any money from anything. We just live for our pensions and our social security. We thought, you know, when we won this land claims, we were gonna at least kind of take it easy. Didn't have to work. Work just as hard now as we did before. I don't see how it's benefiting us. I mean, as elderly that can't get out and earn a living, don't get a thing from it. Everybody thought, you know, when it came through that we were all rich Indians. Not so. I myself, just looking around to see that we aren't ahead at all. So I don't know how the others feel.
Well, I will find out. Thank you. Ma'am, do you wish to say something? Ma'am, do you wish?
Yeah. I'm Clara Natcon, but I've been in this since, I'm not talking as long as I've been in this thing since it started. It took about 40 years, hasn't it? Just about that it started, and I've been in it ever since, but nothing has been improved. Seem like in Heidelberg, it's lack of information to the elders. We don't get that. Our officials, they go to different places for meetings, come back, we don't even know what's going on. But when it first started, we were all so excited. We knew it was going to help our children, not us. But they even told us how it was going to help education program. But I don't know where it stopped, but it isn't doing anything for us. But we do need help, the elders. Like Mrs. Sanderson said, we don't have a program in it that will help the elders. And there isn't very many of us left. You could look around and see, and we do need help. But I'd like this to be known that our town of the officials of this organization don't give us information. That's what I want them to do. It will help us all, or we could help them. Article that came out in a newspaper said, what are you going to do for this program? Or what are you going to do for the elders? But there was no answer. Like Kassan Thompson said, we're satisfied of what our forefathers did, but we couldn't be satisfied because we're in there fighting. And it was so wrong for him to bring out an article like that. We still have fighting us left, so that's about all I can say.
Thank you very much. Could we turn to you, gentlemen?
My name is Woodrow Morris. From the time this land claims, they started it, and I kind of followed it up. My dad and Frank Johnson went to Seattle for Aboriginal hearing with hardly no education. And Philadelphia lawyers questioned him why we were entitled to this Aboriginal rights. And Dad and him, it was pretty hard on him with no education. You know. And these young people don't realize what they went through. But the idea of these land claims was to benefit our great-grandchildren. We didn't expect nothing. But the meaning of the land claims was for our future. But it didn't turn out that way. From the start, I said, the administration of the Sealaska Corporation they start paying off to the highest wages a person could get. I can mention some of them that were school teachers, going from $20,000 to $90,000 paying themselves. And right away I noticed that the internet administration is going to kill us at the end. In the same way in this village corporation, I think we're paying our administrators too high and we have no money to pay them. You can see for yourself, Burke, our land is stripped. At the end of this land claims, after all our industry is gone, we have nothing. At far selling our stock, in 1991, I don't think the stock was worth anything. Probably we owe money on it and we get our returns. That's all I got to say, Bruce. Thank you.
Well, what you, Mr. Mr. Haldane?
Well, from all that you've heard so far, we were composed. The Haida Nation was composed of five tribes. Each village was considered a tribe. Those tribes had complete autonomy, which means they made their own laws on tradition. One of the existing ones right now between the Tlingit and the Haidas is in the olden days, if you went to another village to maybe get fish there or even to visit, they had this welcome song, which is what the Tlingit and Haidas do in their dances. When they got permission to enter this other land that belonged to these people, they all marched up the beach singing this welcome song. So that shows right there that the natives had respect for each other's ownership of land. And by government action, the first time we were required to move all these villages, and I'm from Kasan, even though Kasan was not mentioned in there, the Haidas were complaining about the encroachment of the whites into their trap lines and into their land. So they asked for Dal Island, where there are many camps out there. Some graves are out there too. They wanted that island, but instead of that, Howard Taft in 1911 set up a reservation here of something like 7 square miles just around the vicinity here. So later on, when we became a second-class cooperation, a municipality, President Coolidge revoked that order of the presidential order before that. So there I mentioned the other day, you know, that the Secretary of Interior cannot revoke any action taken by the federal government, see. So when he said in the paper that there would be no reservations here, rather they may be state or state for state, well, the President of the United States, and I gave you copies of it, has already set up an Indian Commission in which he states in there that the natives are entitled under their own form of government to take care of the things that they have not given up. And one of the things, all the things that we have never given up is our property rights, which we call fishing, hunting, trapping, basketry, making use of the forest with canoes and things like that. So I think, you know, that I just got a letter from the White House today asking me to write out what actions the President has taken that has been beneficial to us. And those are the things that I'm going to mention, which is almost giving, opening the door, especially passage by passage of the Helsinki Accord, that's the signing of the different nations in the UN, that states in there that all people have the right of self-determination. We had a law that came into existence on self-determination, but it's so complicated. Every time we try to govern ourselves, then the Bureau steps in. But I believe that through the rights we have on these things here, that when we form our tribal government, we can handle our own laws without interference from the state, because it's an action of law that the United States or the state cannot interfere in the internal affairs of any tribal government. So this one here, we were required to have possessory rights, and the reason for that is of a treaty agreement. Now, most people say to us, you did not agree, you did not sign the treaty agreement, but the Helsinki Accord, as you know, states that the United States and Canada do not recognize sovereignty of the nations. However, they will scrutinize every treaty that has been entered into between another sovereign nation, so that the mention of the Indians in Alaska, who will be subject to such laws as Congress shall pass from time to time for those Indians of that land, says that we are entitled to all the reservation laws that have been passed in the state. And in this portion of this here, especially on the Bolt decision, the Indians down there that were not what they call treaty signers have reservations themselves. And the main law that's in there, the Quingo case in the Supreme Court, is where the natives were getting their food. In fact, when we were fishing for the canneries, when we brought in a load of fish, they would ask us, where did you get it? And they want to know the specific point and everything. Before you know it, there'd be a trap stuck out there. And when we voted on the reservation here, we were given 110,000 acres. Now that is one of the processes that Congress has adopted on land tenure. Every person or every tribe in Alaska and down the states, when they showed possessory rights or showed claim, they gave them 1/8 of that claim. That is what they did to us, and that act states that it's for our exclusive use. We can order anybody out and we can run our own government in there. So on that, I have this copy in here that comes from the federal bar. And I mark things in there which is important to us, but I think this one on fisheries, which were never taken, is one of the most important ones, you know, in the history of legislation for all Indians of the United States. In the State versus Quingle, that's the one I mentioned. That's the same law that was used. And in fact, there was many laws that were used against us and for us in our possessory rights hearing. A member of the Chinook tribe was prosecuted for hunting contrary to state law. His defense was that although his tribe had never had a reservation, it had or aboriginally occupied the area in which the offense occurred. And since that right had never been taken, it continued to exist unabated. This was squarely rejected by the Washington Supreme Court. And as you know, it proceeded on to the Supreme Court of the United States, and judgment was in favor of this non-reservation Indian who was under the same law that showed that they got their fish in the custom places. And now it comes further down for the Tlingit and the Haidas, which I said from the beginning was a precedent set for the big land settlement that followed. in that land settlement, we only got 32 cents an acre as compared to $3.60 an acre, which was the value that was put on the rest of the Alaska, although there much of it was tundra land. Now, a lot of people ask me, why does Angoon come down here and pick lands in our area? Well, there's an amendment to the act. I have that in the House. Because Angoon was situated on Admiralty Island, which was a preserve and a reserve, so that they could not get timber on there, although there is very good timber. And later, the Sciatica or the Sitka Corporation, or yes, that's it, picked lands there, and they're beginning to harvest their timber there, and they're really squawking about that now. So it says in here, on the other hand, Aboriginal rights have been recognized in some cases where tribes sought compensation for land taken from them. The Tlingit and Haida Indians versus the United States, the court required that the value of fishing rights be compensated, considered as an element of value in considering the total value of the land to these Indians. Was their fishing rights in the area since used and occupied to the exclusion of all others? To the same effect is OP Indian versus Missouri tribe. These are other cases, but that's the one dealing with the Haidas. Now this one here is this comes from the federal bar. I'm going to leave it with you so you can see all the rest of it. I'm just picking out the important ones to us. And this here, possessory rights, you will remember that the treaty agreement between Russia, although we did not sign it, we were not signatories to it, applied to us, in which Russia, you know, required that the United States be, you know, protectors for our Indian heritage and everything. And I stated up there how that those people who pledged allegiance to Russia could return to Russia after 3 years. And that was for the benefit of the churches, Russian churches, of which there were many native people who were in there, and mostly in the Aleut district, the chain, Aleutian chain, were members, the congregation of the church. So they, in those words, could have, if they pledged allegiance to Russia, could have returned to Russia. But if they choose to stay, then they will be under the protection of the United States, they and their lands. That's what it says in there. Now, the final points I have here are actually the report that came out of Judge Hanna's hearing here. One of it is a 8th section of May 1884, and I told about that up there in that meeting, but for the benefit of those here. 1884, recognized the right of Alaska Indians to the possession of land in their actual use and occupation, and provided that they shall be not disturbed in the possession of lands claimed by them. And it gives quite a number of things in here where Judge Hanna showed that we had proven possessory rights, and that was because of the law stated where the Indians will be subject to such laws as Congress shall pass from time to time for those Indians of that land. Now, Congress introduced a bill that time to give the Haidas and Tlingits possessory rights without a hearing. But they've come into a stumbling block where in the treaty agreement it says all Indians in a state will be subject to such laws as Congress shall pass from time to time for those Indians of that land. Therefore, if they pass that act for us, automatically the Aleuts and Eskimos and the other Indians would be entitled to that, although they were not suing the government. So therefore, that's the procedure they went through in order that we would prove our possessory rights and our Aboriginal land claims. In here, I left this in here for you. I might state a little bit on this because there is a lot of money involved. This is the withdrawn area for the Heidelberg, and a line happens to run right through the middle of the town. Therefore, they said we had the right to pick one town site out of two town sites. Well, the areas that we have here over in Suquan and Goat Island are just nothing but swamps. A lot of this area down here is swamps. So Sea Alaska, knowing that, had gone ahead and picked those lands that were already cut with the escrow sitting there. That is based on the possessory rights that we claimed before the Land Settlement Act, so that any corporation that picks those lands will receive the escrow fund that is sitting there. And ours amounts to $50 million in escrow. The timber cut during that time was worth $260 a thousand. So the act specifically states that the regents will advise the Indians on stumpage, right-of-ways, leases, and all that. Instead of that, they grabbed all those lands that had that escrow, and we wondered why they should pick lands that were already cut, because the amendment did not come out until 1976. That's when I got a hold of it. I went to the Forest Service, and they were still working on the premise that they drew out of the act before the amendment. So they sent a man down to Washington, D.C., and they told me to wait in town, and he phoned right back, and he said, they want you to pick out this whole withdrawn area. That is what was withdrawn for all the different villages, practically 9 town sites, out of which we picked just one, see. So there's a clause in the act itself that any dispute between lands by the villages or the regions shall be placed in an arbitration board, which will be composed of 2 people from each area, the village and the region. So I believe later on, with all the things that I have of court action and everything, the man that started Borbridge actually bribed William Paul, and William Paul died in the meantime, so I gave up on that. And I believe if we approach them with everything that I have of record, they will be glad to go in and arbitrate and divide that money. Not only us, but Craig and Tlaloc. They grabbed all those lands that were there with the escrow fund sitting there. Although we are a member of Sea Alaska too, see. But I believe rather than fighting with each other in court, let's try to arbitrate and iron it out and make it equal, because they were not even in existence the time that the Secretary of Interior made a freeze on the land. And he's the one that presented our position papers to Congress. So I will leave this with you, and you can use that for study. This is on here. One is from the federal bar, I think this one, and this one here, that possessory right hearing. I made extra copies of it.
Thank you.
It actually takes a lot of study anyway, but you know all those things as a judge.
Well, I
will. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you. Well, would anyone else like to say anything this evening? Mrs. Sanderson?
Thank you.
stated the advantages that we have received, not the elderly, but our young people. They're able to get grants and loans to carry on their education. And then we've had better housing here too, through the Plinkett and Haida. So those are advantages for our younger ones. During my times, there's no such thing as grants or loans. Some of us had to work our way through. So our, and then we have better schools also, and better equipment. So we have advantages too that we should acknowledge.
I'd like to add a little more, Yusuf.
Yes, sir.
In the Council of the Aging, and I believe they helped, you know, to get that certificate from the University of New Mexico, where I finished the law case that they lost, you know, for 4 years. And what does she mention now? It slipped my mind. Just run out of my ear. What you said. Well, it wasn't too more important, I guess. But what I have on there, you know, is quite a lot. I took the guts out of the book, you know, I get from the Federal Bar Association. This year, I was invited again, but because I was ailing, I didn't go to Phoenix, and it was so hot there too, see. But the fact that I went there before and studied is where I got that certificate.
Well, would any others like to say anything? You, ma'am?
No, but I was going to ask, what benefit will we get out of, you know, letting you know how we feel, and will there be anything in it someday for us elderly?
Well, that's a good question. I've told the people everywhere I've gone that I've been asked to do this job by two international Native peoples organizations that are affiliated with the United Nations. We've been asked to go around the state to villages, just as we've been asked to come here to Heidelberg. And I am going to write a report. And I will try to sum up what Alaska Natives all over the state have said about the land claims and about the land and about their families and about the future. And I will send a copy of that report to everybody who spoke at these hearings. And that report will be made public in the summer of 1985. Won't be out until then because I still have to travel to a lot of other villages. And I hope that with that report, Alaska Natives will be able to plan for the future, how to retain their land, what to do about 1991, what to do about sovereignty and self-government. But it will be up to you. I will simply go around the state and collect opinions of people like yourselves at meetings like this, and then I will write a report based on what you say, and then I hope that that report will reveal that there's a consensus among Alaska Natives, that Alaska Natives know where they want to go, and if that is so, I hope my report will show that and indicate the direction that you might go in. Of course, it will be up to you to decide what you're going to do with it.
Oh, that's the one that stuck my mind. In the last meeting we had of the National Indian Council of the Aging, through my efforts to let them know that every time the cooperation was to help the elders, then the rest of the stockholders would squawk. They said, that's not legal, maybe it's not. But if you write a constitution bylaws, just as I showed you yesterday, where we can make our own decisions and run our own government, the National Indian Council, who get their money from the Older Americans Act, we wrote out a constitution bylaws which is largely that we are a non-profit organization, that we will pay token dues, and that we will be considered advisors and consultants as soon as we become 60 years old. So it does not have to interfere with any cooperation laws, as I showed you yesterday. We can just dump the Alaska cooperation laws, and I stated right from the start that land ownership should not be put into a cooperation that's controlled by the state of Alaska. And we can do anything we want, it states in there, notwithstanding any laws that are in Alaska, see, that we can do all those things. But that is one of the things to know that the National Indian Council have done, and I have the Constitution bylaws down the house, you know, and if we do decide, I think it would even be a good, since we're borrowing so much money and pledging so much timber, why cannot they, the board, set up a trust fund of, say, $2 million, which would be self-perpetuating from now on, and out of the interest would be the money that could go to the elderly after they pass 60 years old. That's the main program. And it sounds pretty good, because it's a non-profit organization, and it's built to receive gifts and grants. See, you don't have to say it's a share of the stock. It can be just a grant, or if money is set up like Kasan has done. They sold a portion of their land, 100 million board feet, for $25 million. That's when the price was up high. And that's without the cost of operation, everything like that. Now they got a golden egg, a nest egg, where each one of their members get $10,000 a year just from the interest. So on $2 million that could be put in trust fund for the Haidas, and there's averaging about maybe 30 to 40 Haidas in the whole registered group who are over 60. And that's what we're working on quite a bit with the help of Washington lawyers who we retain in the National Indian Council of the Aging.
Well, thank you, Mr. Haldane, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for inviting us here and for participating in the meeting here tonight. I think we can adjourn our meeting, and thank you. Thank you again. We're going on to Metta Catholic Memorial.
Reference by Mr. Haldane to bribery by John Borbridge, that I direct that be stricken from the record.